Welcome to the Maritime Executives Podcast Series, In the Know. I'm Tony Munoz, Editor-in-Chief. Our Executive Corner podcast will provide conversations with top executives concerning events and issues that are shaping our industry today. We will also bring you up to speed with the latest news and editorials covered by the Maritime Executive.
Welcome to the Maritime Executive Magazine Podcast. I'm Paul Benecki. For this edition, our Editor-in-Chief, Tony Munoz, spoke with Knut Orbeck-Nielsen, CEO Maritime at DNVGL and the current chairman of the International Association of Class Societies, about the role of class in shipping. Listen in for their conversation on shipboard automation, drone surveys, digitalization, and Nielsen's plans for the transformation of IACS.
Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Sure.
And, how did you get into, number one, the maritime industry? Mm-hmm. And more importantly, since the merger, what has become of the structure?
Okay. Yeah, so just to start off, the maritime industry really started off when I was a kid because my parents' house is quite near to the fjord in the Oslo area, and I was out boating in these small boats, and I could see this very nice office sitting, right on the edge of the fjord in Oslo. And I was thinking, that must be a nice place to work. And then on all these small boats, we had at that time the certification logo from DNV at the time. Maybe I was around 12 years old or something. So after that, I was always sort of inclined towards the maritime or the offshore side of the business. Studied at Heriot-Watt University in Edinburgh. And then more or less by coincidence, I got a job interview with DNV. And I got a job, and then I thought I would stay there maybe 3 or 5 years. And I had the chance to get a new job every 3 to 5 years with the same employer, so I thought that was pretty good. So.
And did they move you around a little bit?
So I was, after about 6 years, I went to Japan and had responsibility for an FPSO new building in Japan. About 2 years, so I moved there with my family. It's totally different from anything else, different from Europe. But that was a great learning experience. And then afterwards, I did various jobs in maritime business, but mm-hmm. also on the offshore side of the business. And then when the...
So that's kind of your first love. I like the offshore business. I like drilling and
exactly.
sort of thing. So that really kind of gets you very interested in keeping it on doing what you do.
Exactly. And in the offshore side of the business, it's right. a lot of technologies that are being pushed forward. So I think
right.
this is also something that, sits quite well. And I like to, work on the edge of what's possible with respect to technology. So that was quite cool. And then we had the merger, as you know, is it 5 years now?
It's been about 5 years.
So that sort of changed naturally a lot of the dynamics. We became a lot bigger. We had all the integration. And I was asked to move down to Hamburg to, help out make the merger successful and all that. So I've stayed there with my family.
Are you still in Hamburg?
I'm still in Hamburg. My office is still in Hamburg.
Okay.
So.
And how was the transition moving into a sort of a new structure, new company, and now you're the leader of that company?
I mean, I always thrive on change. So mm-hmm. for me, it was really, many people are quite, reluctant to change. I mean, they prefer to have things, the way it used to be.
Right.
I quite like change. I think it's a great opportunity to try and improve. And I mean, with some of the great characteristics from the GL side and with mm-hmm. some of the great characteristics from the DNV side, it was a great opportunity to try and bring out.
But it's a mega merger, there's a lot of
it's
bodies, a lot of overlap, and.
And also it's two companies with a really strong heritage and culture. And that
mm-hmm.
makes, people are very proud of their past and
sure.
their history. And I think it, probably took us about a year and a half, not on the hard merger issues, but on the more softer, try and align and get everyone on board.
So what is the role of class today in the maritime industry?
So if to explain it quite simply, I would say the role is really one that is independent. It's a third-party role. We are really there to provide certification or trust that the vessel meets certain minimum requirements when it comes to safety. So you can say that the role of PLAS is really provide trust for the owners, the operators, the insurance, the finance, to make sure that the vessels are in a sound condition when it comes to safety.
So you as an organization, you provide many more things for your clients.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Explain some of the, I mean, we understand that the fundamentals are make sure the ship is in good order, but there's a bigger component for what you provide your clients in the overall operation of the maritime industry. You know, explain some of those things to us that your role is with your clients.
Yeah. So before I do that, let me just highlight what are the priorities for IX during my chairmanship. So the priorities that we set out is really to work in three areas. So one is really to help the industry prepare for what we call autonomous shipping. So that is not unmanned vessels, but that is a greater degree of autonomy. Now, this is from an IX perspective, it is important that we look into any of the existing requirements and see if there are any barriers that prevents us from taking this new technology in use. So that is really, from an IX perspective, it's about enabling the industry to move forward, utilizing the advantages of autonomy by removing barriers in the requirements that exists. The second priority is really on facilitating the use of modern inspection technologies. So, for instance, if you saw my video yesterday using a drone, I think this is a very good and clear example of how you can modernize the way we are carrying out surveys on board. So it's always been like the surveyor goes to the item of interest and looks at it. What we are doing now is we are reversing that, and we are bringing the item of interest to the surveyor by using drones or cameras or things like, modern technologies. So that is another area. And then for us in IX, it's really important that we keep on having a very good reputation in the maritime industry, and we worked on two issues in that respect. One is to modernize also the membership criteria to become a member of IX, so it reflects the current regulatory changes. And the second is really that we are benchmarking the quality performance of the members in IX, so that everyone has the possibility to look at, you know, how do we as an individual society compared to the other members of IX. So this is a way to help lift the performance of the members. There's some forward thinking in the key items for IX. That's what brings us to, you know,
to what you're doing at DNVGL. But I have to ask you, I mean, certainly when people start talking about autonomous vessels, the heartburn in the room is pretty substantial. Quickly address what you perceive autonomous ships will do and the benefit that they'll provide us.
So I get this question quite a lot.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Because, as you say, I mean, there's a great concern in the industry. Right. I mean, the maritime industry is really a people's business, right? So there's a lot of concern about, now will the machines take over? What about the personal touch? What about the crew on board, etc., etc.? But I think this is where we make the mistake of thinking that autonomous vessels equals unmanned vessels. That is not the case.
Okay.
So I just want to be very clear on that. What we are talking about is really to try to bring out more efficiencies in the operations and utilizing autonomy. I give you one very concrete example. So For a tanker, for instance, you will normally have 3 to 4 officers attending the engine room.
Mm-hmm.
With a higher degree of autonomy, more sensors, more information from the systems, you could reduce that to, say, 2 officers. So already there, you will get an OPEX efficiency that makes a good business case for the ship owner and the ship operator.
Sure, it's a benefit to the owners. However, I grew up in the industry when we were dumping oil all over Europe. And in Valdez and Alaska, and there's a very big concern that if you don't put too many, you should put more people on a tanker. That's the general consensus in the public. I think that they believe that, you know, the oil industry hasn't earned the right to run autonomous vessels. Believe me, that's a public consensus. I have a lot of friends who ask me what I do for a living, and I tell them, and they always revert back to, well, you know, if they quit just breaking up ships and dumping oil around the world, you know, it always goes down that road. Mm. People always bring that up. So I think that's a big concern, especially with the oil tanker business.
Yeah, it could well be that the public concern is very much along those lines. However, I would say that for me, it is really, I mean, we are very much preoccupied with the safety and the quality of the vessels.
Sure, sure.
And I truly believe that it is not a question of the number of people that you have on board, but it's really a question about the quality of the operations that you are having. And with a higher degree of autonomy, you will also be able to better interact with the onshore operations for technical support, which gives you, say, a better response, a better preparedness, should something become challenging or difficult on board. But I think it's really important to make clear distinctions that we are not talking about, you know,
unmanned
not having
vessel.
People on
right,
board.
Right.
Because I think that is a wrong way to go forward.
Right.
But to have, to utilize the technology, to utilize the possibility to link up with the experts, to have a better preparedness, a better sort of backup, mm-hmm. I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think everyone also, you know, public at large, will be interested in the end result, not whether you have 24 or 30 people on board. I mean, the end result is really to have, you know, pollution-free, safe operation of any.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. So I really wanted to talk about the drone.
Okay.
Surveys. Now, that's a very interesting concept that you brought up yesterday as you were talking about it, and it makes a lot of sense. So tell me more about that.
So in DNBGL, we started this, must have been 2 to 3 years back, and we really, I mean, the whole idea was to think about, you know, it takes a lot of effort to reach some of the spaces on a vessel. So you're inside a tank, you want to go way up to the underside of the deck and you inspect something at a, you know, a distance of 1 to 1.5 meters. It takes lots of scaffolding. It takes gas freeing of the tank. And it's, people are working at, you know, heights, which is in itself, you know, not the ideal position to be working. So we were thinking, what if we could bring the item of interest to the surveyor rather than put the surveyor and the crew member up. And that's where we started testing out drones. And when you go to buy a drone, I'm not sure whether you have one yourself.
No idea.
But I mean, you can buy them everywhere, right? But all drones that are produced for the general public, they have the cameras facing down. Because naturally, if you want to take a footage of your house or your car with it, you want it from an altitude looking down. So the first thing that we had to do was really to make sure that the drone had a camera facing forward and upwards. And then it took a little bit of customizing of what was available. And then naturally to have people to fly inside a tank is a little bit different than just, you know.
So they're on the vessel. They're just going into the...
So what happens in practice is that we bring the drone inside the tank with the survey, that the surveyor and the crewman member is standing on the tank top, which is the bottom of the tank, and then we fly the drone up to all these difficult to access areas. With the quality of the video, you can get fantastic images transmitted straight down to the PC. There you could, you know, make your
analysis.
Corrosion too much? Are there any structural defects?
Right.
Are there any cracks, etc.? You know, you are avoiding putting people in a dangerous working place. You are avoiding putting up scaffolding that takes time and is costly. And when you're putting up the scaffolding, you could also easily damage the coating of the tank.
Sure.
So, I mean, by doing it this way, it's really, you know, very...
So is it more expensive or less expensive?
This is a saving for the operator.
Because
you can do it faster, you can do it safer, and you don't have any, say, accidental damages to the structure. So it makes a lot of sense that we've done it on all different vessel types.
Mm-hmm.
As you saw in the video, we also do it now for the jacket rigs. Some of the interesting areas are quite, on the jacket rig, it's quite difficult to access because it's high, really high elevation. And, you know, what is really interesting is with these drones, when you develop them a bit further, you could easily imagine that you make them what we call the EX-proof. That means you don't need to gas-free the tank. So you could put the drone inside the tank without putting people inside, and that makes it even safer. And then you can pre-program the drone to fly to certain destinations because you know the geometry of the tank. So you can see this has tremendous opportunities.
Tremendous value,
and
of course.
And drones you can get in all different sizes, so you could easily also put a much smaller drone into ducts and really access, you know, difficult to get to places.
Makes complete sense.
It does.
If the technology is there, it makes complete sense. Okay,
so that's the area of drones. So if I could maybe also, you know, take another area which is really promising, and electronic certificates. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Every classification society is in a way in the paper business. We are issuing certificates left, right, and center. And, you know, to have these certificates on board in the right shape, with the right signatures, etc., that is a license to trade. And if there's something wrong with the certificates, you could be detained in the port and you could lose your charter. So what we did last year was to introduce electronic certificates.
Mm-hmm.
So we're shifting all the paper-based certificates over to digital. And we started this in October last year. And already we have issued more than 50,000 electronic certificates. We expect by the end of this year, we have all certificates for the entire fleet on digital format. We'll have it accurate, you can easily access it, and it's a lot less burden for everyone to send the paper around.
The industry is gone that way with maps, and now they're going surveys. What else can we do with digitalization?
There's tremendous opportunities, you know. Let me give you another example, which I think is quite intriguing. So, I mean, in every business, you have customers, and they have questions, and they ask you questions, and you would like to answer them quickly. So in the analog world, it usually took, you know, maybe more like days to answer queries, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the digital world, what we have done is that we have 5 hubs around the world where the customers can reach our experts. Now, it was always a challenge for us, if you had a question, which expert would be the best? And what we have done is we get this centralized, we use a machine learning algorithm to find the best expert to answer your specific question. So from, you know, working in response time or days, that system helps us to respond in 3 to 6 hours.
Let's talk a little bit about the big issues that are facing shipping companies. What are you helping people do today with emissions and with ballast water?
Yeah, so if I could start on the emissions. So policymakers, public at large, have high expectations to the maritime industry. So the pressure from the regulators and the policymakers will continue to be driven forward. And we've seen it already with the sulfur cap in 2020 that you mentioned. Next on the agenda is the CO2 emissions. And then it will move into other areas like noise and black soot and other areas. So the influx of harder and tougher requirements in shipping will not cease. So in this context, it's really important that, you know, the shipping industry looks into what are the alternatives. Heavy fuel oil has been, you know, the most important fuel. You can reduce the emissions by introducing scrubbers, and you could also go to distillates or blends. And there are numerous concerns about availability and price and all these things that we have been discussing for many years. Gas will take a much more dominant position. I mean, it's not CO2 neutral, it's still a hydrocarbon source, but it has some significant saving compared to today's. So as transition fuel, it could be, you know, well positioned, and there's plenty of gas in the world. I mean, the US has a tremendous gas resource in the shale. LNG has the potential to take a much more significant part of the fuel mix in the future.
Right.
And we already now see that it moves not only in the niche segments, but now it's seen gradually an uptake also in the...
We started to see it in the cruise line industry.
Exactly, and some of the big container vessels will be now dual fuel. So, and then there are other opportunities as well to face the challenges of reducing emissions, and that is, if you look, for instance, to battery technologies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, battery technologies at this stage will not be the main source of energy for a vessel, but you could easily see that when a vessel is approaching the port area,
sure,
it could switch over and run on batteries for the final approach, mm-hmm, and thereby reducing emissions in the most sensitive areas.
We get one last question through to you, because I know you're busy talking about Maersk Line and its cyber attack and what it cost them and how they had to rebuild their servers and restructure. It took them days. What are you folks? How are you leading the way in cyber?
So what we have done is very concrete three measures. So we developed together with the industry what we call a recommended practice for how ship owners, operators can increase the cyber resilience. So that is a document that is available to the industry. It gives lots of good guidance what they should do, how they should incorporate both the IT but also the operational, mm-hmm, technology. And that is really a best practice. The second item that we've made available is a cool app that is on our website. The app basically helps you address the gaps that you have in your organization when it comes to cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. So it will, by a certain set of questions, it will detect whether you are okay in this area, mm-hmm, or whether you have gaps that needs to be filled. We also have, you know, what we call the ethical hackers. So if you have a company and you would like to test your resilience, we could have some of our ethical hackers test your robustness of the system. And that we could do for your office operations, or indeed for the vessels. And we are, you know, helping some of the leading players in the industry already with this.
What's your biggest challenge right now?
My challenge is that the business is still contracting, because after the drop in the oil price a few years back, naturally it deflated a lot on the offshore side, and shipping is hitting a new normal. So my challenge is really to be able to do all these changes, becoming more effective, but at the same time deliver a better service to our customers.
Well, that's good.
So it's interesting.
Great
times.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah, it's great stuff. And it was great to talk to you.
Same, Tony. I appreciate it a lot.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to In the Know, the Maritime Executive Magazine podcast. I'm Paul Benecki. We hope you'll join us again for our next exciting discussion on maritime technology, business, and policy. In the meantime, please visit us online at www.maritime-executive.com for the latest news and views from around the industry.